Okay, welcome to our village board meeting. It's a regular board meeting, September 23rd. It's 7:01. If I can ask the clerk, please, to take the roll call.
Trustee Bachner. Here. Trustee Carji.
Here.
Trustee Vasquez.
Here.
Trustee Brennan.
Here.
Trustee Hennig.
Here.
Trustee O'Connell.
Here.
President Odusi.
Here. If I can, I'll ask you to please stand to say the Pledge of Allegiance.
Pledge of Allegiance. To the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Okay. Oh my gosh, okay. All right, okay, Anna, there's really not us. Maybe there's a spot here for you under seven. Do you want to wait for that, Anna, or do you want to speak now?
It's on consent.
Oh, it's on the consent. Or I thought it was going to be. I can't read either. Okay. Yeah, come on up and say your piece.
My name is Anna Schneedorf. I'm at 610 Monroe. In River Forest. I just want to say thank you for the consideration for the ADA, and I assume it's on a consent, yeah. So it's approved.
Not yet.
I just want to say thank you. And
looks good.
Me? It looks good. It's not yet, but it looks good.
It's close.
Bulldogs.
You never know what Bob would do. No, I'm teasing. I'm sorry, Anna.
Couldn't hear you anyway. I just want to say thank you.
Okay.
And I don't know what powers are around, but the street's cleaned up. We haven't had the all-day parkers, so I don't know what someone's done.
Chief, what do you think?
But it's been a welcome. It's just wonderful to see the street instead of both sides.
You tell us once, you tell us twice, but never. You don't have to tell us three times. We listen, yeah. Finally. So, good stuff. Thank you, Chief.
Thank
all right.
You.
Thank you, Anna. Thank you.
That's magical enforcement power.
Yeah. Okay, Nate? Yeah, we don't have anything on the agenda for cannabis, so please.
Yes, well, and maybe I'm, and this is my first time in here. My name's Nate Melman, so I did want to speak about the cannabis issue. I know there's something on the agenda for it. Is this the appropriate meeting to talk about that?
Just by way of background, tonight, the state, the Illinois Department of Revenue has an October 1st deadline to submit a ordinance for an excise tax. Right. So what the staff has advised the board is, regardless of what the outcome is, get the tax on the books, the excise tax on the books, and then even, because the next step for public input is through the Zoning Board of Appeals.
Right.
The authority to collect it. It's right. Not, we're not telling them to collect it because we haven't decided on anything.
No, I understand that.
Okay. But
I
think go ahead.
I think it would send a message about your views if you didn't even approve the authorization to collect the tax, though. And I know that's premature and that's maybe not something that you want to do. But I do want to, at least from my perspective, give you my thoughts on it. Obviously, you have an important role in looking at all the potential tax revenues, and I understand that and appreciate that job and responsibility. But I think you also have to weigh that responsibility along with the costs involved with potentially, not that you're doing it tonight, but potentially down the road, allowing the cannabis business to locate in River Forest. I was just doing some brief research this morning, and just as quick background, I come to this issue from a couple of different perspectives. One as a former prosecutor in the drug unit, one as a military officer for over 28 years, and also as a father of three in River Forest. I was doing some research, and it seems like the most profitable cannabis store in Oregon is making about $400,000 a month. So you compute that out, and it's about $4.8 million a year. You compare that to the 3% tax that is potential revenue for River Forest, and comes to about $144,000 a year. Compared to River Forest budget, which is about $16 million, that equates to an additional revenue of 0.9%. It's not that much. You equate it to the number of citizens in our force, which is a little over 11,000. It's slightly less than $13 extra revenue per person. So I think if you weigh the costs involved versus the extra revenue of $13 per person living in our force, it might change your perspective on whether the costs really outweigh the need for that little bit of additional revenue, potential revenue. And that's just for, you know, one of the best selling stores in Oregon. And obviously, if it's the best selling, you're gonna have a lot of traffic and so forth. And that's one of the costs involved, not only to increase traffic and increase safety issues, arguably you're gonna have increase in police costs, but also the cost to the potential property values in our forest. I mean, we have a community where people want to come here because it's a safe place to raise and send their kids to school. So that's a potential cost as well. And then the cost just to the general welfare. You know, we have an obligation, at least I think most of us do, to set an example of what is right and what is wrong for our kids. And if you approve down the road, potentially, the inclusion of a cannabis business in River Forest, it goes to that moral cost as well. And so I just want you to think those things through, and as we go through this process. And if it's, if you're inclined to not approve it, despite I know the bind you're kind of in, I think it sends a strong message to the people of River Forest, the citizens of River Forest, of where you stand on the cost versus the potential revenue that this may bring in. Thank you very much.
Yep, thank you, appreciate it. Okay, all right, then our next is item three, which is citizens' comments. Do we want to do, well, we'll go ahead and do the citizens' comments first. So Bob, would you like to start? I mean, elected official comments, excuse me.
Well, he is a citizen, too.
You are a citizen, too. Elected official. And then we'll bring the recognition of the Traffic and Safety Award up next. Okay. Thank you, trustee.
Good evening. I do just want to extend another thank you to everyone who was involved in helping to pull off a very successful lemonade. Thank you to all of our various departments, police, fire, and public works, and to everybody who came out and attended and supported us. We don't have a final figure, unfortunately, so you'll have to watch our Facebook feed to get a total on that, but it really was a good day. We had a good turnout. Based on our cup usage, we probably had about 3,000 people come out throughout the afternoon, so thank you.
Okay, thanks, Patty.
So I just wanted to give a quick report on the Illinois Municipal League conference that I attended late last week, two of the 3 days. And a couple of the sessions I attended, one was on local regulation of cannabis. I already knew most of what they said from Lisa's fine reports. And to the extent you may have said some of this and I didn't hear it, there are a couple little snippets that I thought were really good. One was that Illinois is the first state to regulate cannabis via legislation rather than via ballot referendum, which means that our legislators in Illinois presumably have had time to think through and prepare a really thoughtful piece of legislation, or more thoughtful than responding quickly to a ballot referendum. Second, there are going to be far fewer licenses in Illinois as compared to Colorado. Colorado has twice as many licenses as Illinois and only one-third the population. So that was interesting. And finally, one reason why there will be very few establishments in Illinois that will allow on-premise consumption of cannabis is that there is no dram shop insurance for cannabis. So there's only one place in Denver where you can actually consume on-premise. I thought it was interesting. I also attended a renewable energy presentation, and the snippet I took away from that was that downstate they're working on a Clean Energy Jobs Act. It's known as CEJA as opposed to FEJA, which was our Federal Energy Jobs Act. And the big push there is to eliminate gas-powered vehicles. They've identified transportation as the number one spot that's negatively affecting the environment. So I'm going to be talking with the Sustainability Commission about what I learned there. And attended a social media policy presentation where particularly interesting to those of us who are elected officials and village employees, they made a strong recommendation that public officials and municipal employees keep their social media accounts and presence separate in terms of your public and private persona. So don't post village business and your political views on your, you know, private account unless you want to receive all sorts of comments that you cannot take off. Thanks.
No sharing. Okay.
Yeah, that's all I have to report.
Great. Thank you. Kathleen?
Nothing other than just congrats to the police department on the Traffic Safety Award. Job well done.
Okay, three items. First of all, a shout out and kudos to our fire department and our police department for hosting the 9/11 Remembrance Ceremony, honoring the lives of the lost as well as our first responders. I thought it was well attended, and a number of the trustees were there as well. And so it was done in a very respectful manner. So thank you very much for that. The other item was congrats to Trustee Hennig on the lemonade. It was well attended, and a number of, again, trustees have attended it as well. So we're looking forward to the big congrats at the end. The last but not least, President Ducey and I attended a meeting on behalf or with the Metropolitan Mayor's Caucus relating to our aging in process committee, which is now a collaborative, so it's now a permanent committee. We were at the knot. We met with the COT Foundation trying to solicit grant funds for our continuous efforts in this project. So we're crossing our fingers, and hopefully we'll hear something soon. So that's it. Thank you.
Great. Thanks, Russ.
I apologize for missing the meeting last week. I was 2 weeks ago. I think it's the first time I've ever had food poisoning. But I did listen to the tape, especially I was most interested in the committee of the whole meeting, and it's too late. I generally agree with the comments that were made. I do think that we should pursue it, and I definitely think that we shouldn't allow the lounges or whatever, you know, smoking on the premises. I just don't see how our being an island of not having marijuana sales, which is legal, improves benefits, prevents any of the costs that you spoke spoke of. It's a legal product, and we sell alcohol, we sell tobacco. People are going to smoke it, so we might as well take advantage of the revenue that we get. I know it may be a little bit of money, but every dollar that we get from alternate revenue sources means it's not a dollar that we have to tax the residents. So I'm in favor of it, subject to obviously the zoning and stuff like that. Right. I want to specifically congratulate the fire department on getting that grant I saw in the minutes. I would have congratulated last week, but I wasn't here. And also congratulations to the police department on the traffic award.
Yeah, great. Thank you, Tom. Erica?
So before I begin, I'd like to do an acknowledgement of land and note that we are mindful that we hold these meetings on land that was once and still inhabited by Indigenous people, including the Ojibwa, the Chippewa, Menominee, the Potawatomi nations, and more, and that we remember our nation's history and honor the Native people as stewards of this land that was colonized and that River Forest continues to be a place of many people from diverse backgrounds that live and gather. So you had a wonderful lemonade again this year, and just congratulations to you. It's so much fun. It's a team effort, and it's the town and the Citizens Court did a great job as always. So yay for that. I want to remind people that we are going to have our second meeting for the committee, the complete count committee for the census tomorrow, and look forward to maybe putting together some steps and subcommittees around what River Forest can do to make sure that we are counting everyone once and in the right place. And I will take out my nifty 50 ways the census data are used. Number 23 on the list, distributing medical research. Number 24, reappropriating seats in the House of the Representatives. So
got a few more to go through, but you know, it's important in so many different ways. And congratulations again to the police and to the fire for the awards that they have received.
Thank you. Thank you, Erica.
I have one more thing that I wanted to say. I attended the climate strike that was in our area and for the youth. And it was so energizing to be around so many young people working towards saving our planet. I think one of the chants that I heard and that really stuck with me is that we only have 11 years. And when you think of it that way, it makes me proud that we have such a strong sustainability commission in our area. So
thank you. Okay, well, I have just a few things. First off, I don't know if you all know this, but September 30th is Indigenous Day. So happy Indigenous Day. It was House Bill 0123 that was approved by Governor Rauner in 2017 that created the day. So that's the last Monday of September. So happy Indigenous Day. The second is I did talk to Eric Palm. I know there's been some questions and discussion regarding two of our construction sites. Regarding you know, ensuring that it's safe and that there is no debris that comes or falls out of the from the fencing. And so I think Mr. Palm and I have agreed that we will ask our contractors to wrap the fencing. And it isn't a policy, but we will make it a policy going forward for any continue you know, demolition or construction that we do here on. So I just wanted to make sure that that got on record and that you all knew that. I also attended the IML with Katie for two of the days. I actually went 3 days. I agree with Katie. The cannabis discussion was quite insightful, and you took away some of the great nuggets, and you did a great job training us. So, Lisa, congratulations on that. I think you could have been up there giving that presentation. I also moderated a legislative panel, which I found fascinating. We had one senator and two representatives that I was leading. And I could tell you this, pension reform and consolidation is going to be very difficult for the veto session. It's a an interesting topic. It's one of the top legislative issues that IML is working on. It's a must that we do this pension consolidation. This is the 655, I think, or 53 pension funds outside of IMRF, and it's if we consolidate it, I think they say there's anywhere between 2 to 10% additional money that we can find to actually fund the continuation of pensions. And then I also attended the annual meeting on Saturday morning. And I think, Russ, you mentioned the Cott Foundation, so that was, I won't review that again. So those are my notes. So that's all. We'll go ahead and now go on to the consent agenda. So, oh my gosh, we got awards, and I want to congratulate, but I was going to do that when you were done. So please, Chief O'Shea, can...
Mr. Paul Rizzo.
Hi, Paul.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Thank you for having me. Just by way of a brief introduction, my name is Paul Rizzo. I'm a law enforcement liaison, and I work for the Department of Transportation. I'm also a co-director of a program we call the Illinois Traffic Safety Challenge. The Traffic Safety Challenge is a friendly statewide competition between police agencies of like size and type. It's coordinated by the Illinois Chiefs Traffic Committee, and it's supported by a NHTSA grant administered through the Department of Transportation, as well as much appreciated funding from both public and private partners. The program recognizes agencies that have successfully implemented comprehensive traffic safety programs with the required elements of policies and procedures, officer training, agency and public recognition, public information and education, and targeted data-driven enforcement. The program targets four major traffic safety priorities: occupant protection, speeding, impaired driving, and distracted driving. It recognizes agencies for the approach and effectiveness of their overall traffic safety efforts. Agencies are not evaluated just for enforcement initiatives. This is not a Toasters for Tickets program, but for implementing innovative problem solving in their communities, using public information activities, and creating departmental policies that support their traffic enforcement endeavors. The challenge provides law enforcement agencies with an opportunity to make a significant difference in the communities they serve. Winning programs effectively combine many different strategies to reduce traffic crashes and related injuries. This year, the River Forest Police Department earned a first place award in the category of 26 to 35 sworn officers, and by doing so, was awarded a handheld radar device and a portable breath testing device, as well as the grand prize, which was a $30,000 suite of squad equipment.
Yeah.
And while the inscription on the award may say the River Forest Police Department, this is truly a community award. And if it weren't for the support of the Village Board, the Village Management Team, and the citizens of River Forest, for the Police Department's education, information, and enforcement programs, this award would not be possible. Not to mention the efforts of Traffic Officer Dan Humphreys, who put together this lovely, suitable for framing program, which I'll be giving to you. Ultimately, the traffic safety challenge is about saving lives and reducing traffic-related injuries. Your efforts have no doubt made your roadways safer for everyone who works in, lives in, and travels through River Forest. President DeDucci, if I may?
Yes. This is wonderful. In fact, one of our guiding, what we'll call our guiding values and guiding principles in River Forest, and the number one guiding principle is safety for all of our residents and businesses. And so this really makes me proud, and I know the trustees proud, that you take that very serious and for our residents and for our businesses and for the folks that come through our town. So I want, on behalf of the Village Board myself, I want to say congratulations to all of you and the team behind you that make this possible and make our town safe. So thank you so much. Really, I appreciate it. Yes, and so if we can get a picture, that'd
be great. Thank you.
You
guys did it,
not me. You're in the photo.
You can slide that table back.
No problem. Thank you.
You can send it to your kids.
I think it's a.
Administrator Palm, would you please place this in a prominent place in River Forest?
Oh, yes.
In our office. All right.
Trustee Cargi mentioned we're starting to run out of room.
I can see it right up there.
Yeah, that's true.
All right. Very good. That's great. Thank you so much. All right. So now we're going to move on to our consent agenda. If I could have a trustee move to approve the consent agenda items A through I.
I make a motion to approve the consent agenda items A through I.
Here a second. Okay. If I can, any discussions or further questions on the consent agenda? Hearing none, I'll ask the clerk to please read through the consent agenda and then take the vote.
A, committee of the whole meeting minutes, September 9th, 2019. B, regular village board meeting minutes, September 9th, 2019. C, executive session village board meeting minutes, September 9th, 2019. D, amend Section 9-3-20 of the Village Code for an ADA parking space on Monroe between Quick and Oak Ordinance. E, amend Section 9-3-20 of the Village Code for removal of an ADA parking space on Ashland between Madison and Vine Ordinance. F, create Section 3-8-15 of the Village Code regarding imposition of a municipal cannabis retailer's occupation tax ordinance. G, financial report August 2019. H, accounts payable August 2019, $2,443,178.27. I, village administrator's report. Trustee Brennan.
Yes.
Trustee Hennick.
Yes.
Trustee O'Connell.
Yes.
Trustee Bachner.
Yes.
Trustee Cargi.
Yes.
Trustee Vasquez.
Yes.
Congratulations, Anna. All right. She didn't even hear me. All right. So moving on to the consent items for separate consideration. Okay. We've got two of them. So should we take them separately?
Yeah.
We should.
Okay. Since they're separate. Okay. If I can get a motion and a second on 6A.
I'll move to approve payments for the Madison Street Gift Fund in the amount of $7,973.36.
I hear a second.
Second.
Okay.
Okay.
Any questions? And go ahead.
No, just for myself. As in the past, I'm going to recuse myself and ask the clerk not to call my name based on the common law conflict of interest, since my law firm represents School District 90 and School District 200.
Okay. Hearing no further questions or comments, I'd ask the clerk to please take the vote.
Trustee O'Connell.
Yes.
Trustee Bachner.
Yes.
Trustee Cargi.
Yes.
Trustee Brennan.
Yes.
Trustee Hennick.
Yes.
Okay, can I hear a motion and second for 6B?
Motion to approve payment from the general fund to McDonald's Caravites for $254.15.
Second.
Okay.
I'd also ask the clerk not to call my name for the same reason, my relationship with the franchisee.
McDonald's. Okay, very good. Hearing no further questions or comments, I'd ask the clerk to please take the vote.
Trustee Hennick.
Yes.
Trustee Bachner.
Yes.
Trustee Cargi.
Yes.
Trustee Vasquez.
Yes.
Trustee Brennan.
Yes.
Okay, moving on to recommendations of boards, commissions, and committees. So the first one is a traffic and, well, they're all traffic and safety, but we'll take them one at a time here. So if I can get a motion and a second on 7A, and then we can discuss it a little bit.
I move to approve an ordinance to amend Title IX of the Village Code to install a resident-only permit parking zone restriction on the south side of Linden Street between Thatcher and Gale.
Do I hear a second?
Second.
Okay. All right. So, Jeff, you can either discuss this or we can ask you questions. Or
yeah, I mean, I'll give you a little background. I don't, that first one reaches back quite a ways, so I don't know if everybody was here when that conversation started. It initially, we were starting to see an influx in phone calls about anecdotally commuters parking in unrestricted streets down that way. I believe Chief O'Shea could attest to that. So one of the things that the traffic and safety started looking at was implementing some parking restrictions down there. So we had a few public meetings. We ended up implementing, it ended up being a 2-hour time limit in a lot of those areas. And there were a few folks on Linden between Thatcher and Gale that would prefer to have it not be a time limit zone, but rather a resident permit only zone. So that's what we had the meeting on Wednesday. They suggested that the commission recommended that for approval, and that's what's before you this evening.
Okay. So there's a reason, I mean, maybe you said this and I missed it. So the reason the residents came back and said we want what resident only was what again?
They did. Personal preference, I guess, for lack of a better term.
So they didn't like the 3 hours. They thought that was constraining.
Based on what their needs were on their street. Nobody seemed to use Thatcher or Gale. They all like to park on the sides of their house on Linden there. Based on the way they come and go from their homes, they all believe that the resident permit-only zone was more appropriate for them.
How are we charging? I mean, I was surprised it's not just resident-only. Why is it referred to as resident permit?
So around the commuter zones, if you will, it's resident permits so that somebody on the 1400 block of Forest couldn't go park down there and hop on the train.
Are we charging for the permits?
I don't believe we charge for resident. You get two free per house, and then if you need more, I think it's like $1 a permit or something like that.
Patty, did you have a question?
No, I had listened to the meeting earlier today, okay. And the concern the residents were sharing is that their abilities to come in and out were hampered, and so being able to park right on Linden, close to their entrance, they go in and out all day, so they didn't want to have to move their car, and so they didn't want to be restricted to that two-hour time. The other concern they had is that they may not even always be there for a two-hour stretch. They're back and forth, but it may appear to the reader that they've been there for all day long, and so their concern was potentially getting tickets and having to shuffle around. And
so. Well, we know we're doing a comprehensive parking study throughout the village, but in this particular case, it just seems like we could probably make the change back, give them the convenience that they wanted, in spite of the fact that we're doing a comprehensive parking study. Chances are it's going to come back looking like giving them a parking permit. So I don't know why we wouldn't just allow them to have what they had before. I mean, unless something else came out of that meeting that I missed. Go ahead, Kate.
I have a question for Jeff. Are there more of these coming down the pipeline so that at every one of our meetings we're going to be having another block that's asking for a revision to the parking? At the same time, on parallel path, we're doing an overall village study to address the overall village parking issues.
Yeah, so we have a request for proposal out that I think is due back October 2nd or October 4th to study commuter parking issues, shortages, other things we can do throughout the village. That said, there's this issue, and I have two more requests that have come in recently with a third resident that has indicated she's potentially headed down that path as well. So, yes, this is kind of a continuous thing.
And they may end up being in the plan.
Yeah, perfect.
Yeah.
Perfect if they have in the plan, but do we want to be working on each of these piecemeal at the same time that we
want to? When is the plan? You're sending out an RFP plan. And then.
Well, the request for proposal is due back to us early October, and then from that point to, we'd have to potentially, this isn't going to be cheap, so we'd have to budget that, I imagine, into next year. I don't know, we haven't really talked about how that all would lay out, but.
We'll be moving forward.
No, I know, but I mean, to answer Katie's question, I mean, if we hold off on this, and we say to the residents, no, not right now, because we're doing this big major study, but we are going to have something to you by.
Yeah, so we'll have a more concrete timeline once we select a vendor. But let's say you do an award at the second meeting in October, the consultant gets started in November. Probably November, December, January to study it, maybe a little bit less, put together the findings, go to traffic and safety, have it come to the board. So you're probably looking early first quarter next year.
January, first quarter.
Yeah, first quarter 2020 before.
January.
Yeah. message received.
Before March. Who knows, right?
Okay, let's call it March.
Yeah.
That might be traffic and safety in January and VBOT March.
So let's say March. So let me ask, so you think all the next three or four discussions that you're having with residents will come before us, before March?
Yeah, I mean, the two that have been requested and submitted, if you will, the next traffic and safety meeting is in November. So unless you all decide we don't want to hear these until after that study is completed, those would be brought to you. I guess it'd be the end of November or early December.
Can you clarify where are those additional requests coming? And the only thing before you even answer that, when I look at the map here, it seems this little stretch right here closes the loop in terms of you have all the stuff on the 300 that's all green. You have Linden East all green. So you're really just finishing off from Gale to Thatcher green. So that's all consistent. Everything then going south is all the same. So to me, I mean, I understand the concern about these one-offs. This particular case seems we're just being consistent down Linden. It's, you know what I mean? But so that's why I'm asking more of these other ones.
Sure.
Are they in this area that are going to be a similar issue, or are they,
they are not
a different one-off than here?
Let's do it.
They're different areas, but I would argue similar motives. The other one of the other ones is the 600 block of Monroe.
Go figure that one.
Not a surprise to anyone. And the second one, the second one is Chicago and Bonnie.
Well, that one's a more difficult because
Chicago Avenue being the issue there. So there's those two.
And what's the cost? The third one. I mean, with each one of these requests, if we're making people's lives easier for the next 6 months, what's the real cost in fulfilling these requests as they come?
At this point, it would really just be staff time, putting the signs up and kind of changing some of the systems that we have in place, the maps and things like that. But
I'm fine with this one because it really just does complete the circle. But I would like a moratorium on the rest of these.
Especially if it's the 600 Monroe. Right. It's a juggernaut.
I think we should solve the problem.
And they are different.
Yes.
Because those residents didn't mind the two-hour parking.
I agree.
And that's what's going here. Where this they don't want to be restricted to the, but we do want to deter the commuters, and that's what this does going green.
But I'm just saying, stop the train until we get a plan in place. Okay.
No, and I agree with that. I mean, now that you said where the other two were coming from, it sounds like that's true. Yeah. Those are, the pieces of the puzzle that we're trying to fix anyway. Right. So this one seems just so logical with help the residents.
I guess Chicago's not a commuter issue, is it?
It is to the individual who submitted the petition. Chicago's unrestricted in that area, and you can't park east of Bonnie. So between Bonnie, Clinton, and Bonnie, sounds like there may be some folks walking to either the bus stop or the Oak Park businesses, or even the Green Line at that point, or Oak Park Metro. I don't know, but the perceived issue there is a similar nature.
Okay. Any further comments or questions? I'd ask the clerk. Let's take the vote on this.
Trustee Bachman.
Yes.
Trustee Cargi.
Yes.
Trustee Vasquez.
Yes.
Trustee Brennan.
Yes.
Trustee Hennick.
Yes.
Trustee O'Connell.
Yes.
Can I just a clarification? So are we saying that there's a moratorium then? You would prefer that there be a moratorium?
Well, we didn't vote on that.
Okay. All right.
But what we're saying is, Trustee Cargi suggested, and I think Trustee Brennan was suggesting as well, is that this one seemed logical because it was an extension, as Patty said, to what they had it before. The other one seemed a bit more complex because it is going to move the puzzle around a little bit at Monroe and Chicago. So, and hopefully we can nudge you along quicker to get it done, and then we'll get everybody happy.
Got it. So case by case basis, then. Okay.
That's what I think.
All right.
Okay, so let's move on to 7B. If I can have a trustee to give me a motion and another second on B.
I will move to concur with the Traffic and Safety Commission's recommendation and direct staff to increase police department presence in the 0 to 100 block of Keystone.
I'll second.
Okay. Jeff, you want to take this one?
And 0 give the through 100.
Trustees, huh?
I was just trying to figure out if it was two blocks or one.
It started
it's a 100
as one
block.
And it turned into two.
Yeah.
The initial request from the resident was to restrict the left turn from eastbound Madison to northbound Keystone. Mm-hmm. Through the course of conversation at the Traffic and Safety Commission meeting, there were some supporters there from the 100 block as well. So it kind of morphed into a two block enforcement area. And that's what's before you here this evening.
Okay, so this is not parking. This is traffic, so it's slightly different than what we're looking at. Very different than what we were looking at.
I'm trying to understand the why.
The why. What do you mean?
Why this block versus a lot of other blocks in town?
Sure. So, again, anecdotally, the issue that was suggested was that eastbound traffic tends to stack from the light at Jackson or Des Plaines and backs up west to around this area, and that's where folks tend to bail out, if you will, and seek alternate routes through, eastbound. This resident just happens to think that they see the bulk of that. Some of that had to do with, for instance, Thatcher's really busy. Gale has some parking allowed on it, so it looks a little more congested. So for whatever reason, Keystone, again, based on their perception, seem to be one of the major cut-throughs. So that's why they were requesting this.
So here's my suggestion. I don't know what police department presence means. I mean, did they stay there for an hour? Did they stay there for 5 hours? Do we put a dedicated chief? Are you going to be there? I don't know. So I'm hoping not.
Yes. You're looking for the chief.
Keystone. Here's my issue. My issue is that I think this is nice to say, but I don't think it fixes the residents' real issue, long-term or even short-term, frankly. So my suggestion, and I did talk to Eric a little bit about this, and that we remand it back to the staff to come back with a real solution versus this kicking the can down the road a little bit, like we're going to, take care of it with police presence. I think we can take care of it with some other type of solution. I don't know if it's, speed bumps, if it's a no turn on left, I know in IML we saw some signs that had, if you go fast, we snap, some data on how many cars actually go fast down a street, so we can gather some data, some statistics to just say how many cars are going down there and how fast they are going. Maybe not the car itself, but
we can even put our speed monitors. I know there's a name for them, those solar powered.
Right.
Speed monitors there for a little bit.
We do plan on temporarily until we have our staff meeting on this issue. Oh. We already have some officers that are monitoring the area, and we will be moving our speed trailer there. Right now, this time of the year, our two speed trailers, as you guys have seen, are focused in our school zones. We're still in the beginning of the school year, trying to slow down traffic for all the parents, students, and others that are trying to get the kids to and from school safely. But we will bring one up to move down to that area as part of an all-encompassing strategy.
As part of. And yes. Yeah. So with this, I don't want to not help the block of Keystone, but I don't think this is really helping them. I just think it's kind of kicking the can a little bit. And I think we should help them, and we should come up with a real solution to their issue. And if it's, like I said, a no turn on left, if it's a, speed bump, I don't know, or whatever it might be to slow traffic or cut traffic from going down Keystone, we should really look at it. Because, we might have police presence for a couple months, and then all of a sudden our police are doing something else. And I just don't want to give the residents this false expectation that we're really going to solve, the problem in the long term. It will be a 30-day solve.
I was thinking, we had a police presence on our block a couple of years ago, I think it was, and at times it was just an empty car, and other times there was an actual officer in the car.
We could do that.
And I don't do scientific studies, but it seems to me that people don't speed as much down my street as they used to. It helps not only at the stop sign, and that may be part of the explanation. They used to use William as a race course.
Right.
And it did work. And
that
solved the problem, or addressed the problem at least, before the stop sign was in. So.
I'm open to anything, but
I think, well, Chief, first of all, is there, you said that it was anecdotal evidence from them. Do we have any objective evidence to suggest that Keystone, that this street is a problem?
No. No, but we haven't done a full flight. I mean, we could call a traffic consultant in to
the police are focused on it,
study.
Though, and I think that's maybe what the resident wants, is just for there to be some awareness so we can figure out what to do to make that work.
Well, no, if you really listen to the traffic and safety, that was kind of their, we'll put police presence over there. It wasn't like another, let's come back and think about this further. So, I mean, I'm not suggesting we don't do that, and we could suggest, but I really think it should go back to staff. Staff really needs to think about this and then come back to us with a real recommendation.
Which is what they had talked about at the meeting. They said have some solutions like the dummy car, some actual police presence, rotating. They didn't want to dictate what that looked like. They wanted to leave it to the police department to do that. Having the trailer out there, getting some data on speeds and amount as the short term, but yes, they very much talked about, one of the commissioners in particular said, we need to have long term
solution,
specific solution. But it was mentioned, Tom, to your point, that even just putting some of these temporary things in place could help change behavior. Like, people have just gotten so used to that, here's a quick, fast turn off Madison, and so having some of these others, at least.
And we should do that by just by rule, you know, that, that there's this traffic issue. I mean, here, we're okay. I just think that once we approve this, then we go off and do our thing and we never revisit it. And so either we put something else on this, like we have staff to come back to the village board with another recommendation in addition to having police presence, or we just remand it back. I mean, something has to be
added.
Well,
that is what was discussed at the meeting as well. Someone called the motion, one of our commissioners called the motion to put a time frame. We're going to do these various strategies for 3 months and then come back, and they wanted a report in terms of information as far as what does this look like, what are we going to do to really have a permanent solution.
That's not on this. So that's not what this vote is. And so I just, that's my point. I mean, it's one thing said over there, and the other thing is the vote says police presence.
Well, but I think that we should establish that if we have these things in place, have a time frame of when we want to have a goal of having these addressed.
And I don't disagree with all the suggestions that are being made. What I'm thinking then, do we really need a motion, or do we just, like we do with other things, we direct staff to come back with some other ideas and then bring it back?
That's why.
Yeah.
As I said, I would probably not vote on this and then remand it back to staff.
Yeah.
Right.
I didn't mean to interrupt you, Patty. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt you. Okay. Go ahead.
Yeah. So if the trustees Kargi and Hennick made and seconded the motion, if they want to withdraw the motion and the consensus is to ask staff to do what you've discussed, you can do that and then move on to your next agenda.
I'll withdraw the motion.
Second.
Okay. Great.
Okay. Then the direction
second.
Is to
direct.
Understood.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. All right. Then 7C. Yeah. If I can get a.
I move that we amend Title IX of the Village Code to change commuter parking for scooters and motorcycles.
Yep.
Second.
Got a new structure for commuter permit. Did you finish it?
I know I ended with my sentence went up, but I don't see that.
Because it went to a discussion then.
Yeah, and then it says discussion,
regarding new structure.
So maybe,
for commuter permit. Is that what you want?
Read it on here. Where am I here?
Yeah, second. It would be a motion to approve an ordinance to amend Title IX of the Village Code
to install
at the requested locations on Central and Hawthorne Avenues dedicated daily parking zones for motorcycle scooters at a rate of 250 and monthly permit parking zones for motorcycle scooters at a rate of $25 on 5-1 of 19 and then of $27.50 starting 5-1 of 2020. So if someone just wants to say so moved.
So moved.
Okay. So moved. Second. All right.
Okay.
Why are we doing it retroactively? Are we getting refunds or?
No, we don't have it. It's just the way the code is set up. There are the trigger dates for that's all in the fiscal year. So. Okay.
So. Jeff, you want to discuss this or Gary?
No, I've weighed in on this one, so I am plugged in.
You gave us a presentation.
Well, not really. It's just a map. It's a map. Gotta use the TVs. Oh, the Bears came on. Oh, sorry. How did that happen? I'm sorry. Never let that happen again. All right. So tonight the discussion really is twofold. One is around motorcycles and scooters. So we have established one area along Hawthorne for scooter parking, which is over here. And what was addressed by a resident was the concern of actually, number one, the location. It being a little bit farther away and not a more visible, secure area. So they're concerned about, you know, someone driving by and, you know, picking up the scooter, throwing it in the back of a truck and driving away. But then also, more importantly, the pitch of the street. So at that area of Keystone, the grade of the street starts to go down a little bit. So how you park that could cause, it's not a very flat location. So the thought was, you know, some people are still parking there, but, you know, it would be more prone and susceptible to tipping over. So the idea staff had was to move it over here, and that's just south of, it's actually near where that West Thatcher parking lot is. And so right now there is a bike rack there, an older bike rack that's not currently very used very much because we put in more bike racks around the train station. And so the thought would be is we would pour an apron there, and then you would drive up and we'd have, what, how many? Three or four, we think?
We're at five.
Five? I think six is a scooter dozen, maybe. No. Okay. That's a bad joke. Never mind. Anyhow, so about five.
Put the Bears game out.
Yeah, put the Bears game on. Five five scooter parking locations there. So that would help address the issue around the physical, where they would physically be parked. And then the second idea, second thought raised was about changing the rate. So currently we still charge the same rate we do for daily spots, which is $5. We would propose changing that to $2.50, which is obviously half of that amount. And maybe that will become another incentive for people to start using their scooters or their motorcycles to park in and around the area. And then we would also establish a permit as well. So that right now the monthly permit for commuters is $50 a month. The scooter motorcycle would be half of that, so $25 for this period. And then next year on 5/1, the permit goes up to $55, so it would go up to $27.50.
And Eric, can you remind me, are those spaces smaller than typical parking spaces then?
Yeah, correct, yes.
Eric, how much more concrete needs to be poured to accommodate those five or six spaces?
I believe it's more of the apron, correct?
Just
the apron. So we're going to keep the existing parking pad, strike that, the existing bike pad that's there, remove the bike rack, and then just pour in the parkway area an apron so they can drive up.
The curb out.
One of the concerns we were having is people were starting to park there already, and it's illegal unless it's designated so to park your motorcycle or scooter at a bike rack area.
You would just make a soft curb and just depress, lead them to what
park. Depress the curb, yeah. Take the grass out in the parkway, and then apron it up.
Yeah, because that lot, as Jeff very well knows, was heavily discussed and made into a permeable pavers there. And mm-hmm. so I just wanted to know if we were going to be covering up more of the green space or the permeable space.
You will be losing a little grass for the apron, but not adding
it up to it.
Right. Mm-hmm. And again, it's that tricky balance because then again, taking it off the roadway, they're a little bit more secure. Cars aren't driving by it. So.
Mm-hmm. And then not jumping up the curb.
Right.
So then eliminating the old spaces.
We would, at this point, we would keep them. Some people still aren't as bothered by that, so we would still publicize this and push people over there first. Okay. And certainly, you know, as we'll discuss here in a little bit, the parking component to what we do as a government organization is somewhat of a, it is. It's a business enterprise, so we're also trying to be responsive to, from a business perspective, the needs of our customers. And so more people continue to use these and want these, then we want to make that available.
So, question. So the fee is $25 now, goes to $27.50 May 1. Does all the other parking go up the same price, same increment on May 1?
The daily rate does not. The daily rate will stay at 5. I believe some of our other spaces go up. I'd have to go back and take
Where's
a look.
The 27?
Does 50 go to 55?
Yes.
July 1.
No,
does
May 1.
Go to 110?
Yeah, so it does it? Yeah. Yes. Correct. 100 would go to 100, 110.
You're talking about for the 24.
Yes. Okay. So yeah, it's scheduled.
Yearly?
Yeah.
Is that a yearly?
That's
or
for
a
the
half
20.
Year?
That's for the 24 hour.
Yeah. But yeah, yearly, not a half year.
It's $100 per month, or $110, or
oh, the increase.
Yeah,
yearly.
Those are the, yeah.
Yes, correct. It's every annual. Yep.
Okay. Any questions on the premium parking?
Kind of and then nice this rate would be effective as well as our new not on this map, but the scooter parking over at by Town Center as well.
So right now we're just voting on the scooter piece of
correct.
It.
Right.
Premium we haven't.
No, but
that's another discussion.
But that's
and you're not even really voting on that.
Yeah, no, I know.
Yeah, okay.
Thing you're doing. All right. No. Yeah, we need to get the scooter thing out. All right.
By the way, just for the record, I don't park over here, so I'm not parking.
Yeah, okay. So you don't have a conflict.
I don't.
Okay.
Well, it wouldn't be a conflict.
Should we call it James Way? Is that what we call it?
Call whatever you want.
All right. People are allowed to park here 24 hours a day then? Like, they could keep their car here?
The only places where you have 24-hour parking in that lot is in this area. This is the depot lot, so yeah. There's the train depot where the Parts District has its office. So you have 24-hour parking in this spot, and then this area is a commuter overnight.
Thank you.
Works in concert.
Okay. Any further questions regarding the scooter? All right. So if I can please get the vote.
Trustee Vasquez.
Yes.
Trustee Brennan.
Yes.
Trustee Hennick.
Yes.
Trustee O'Connell.
Yes.
Trustee Bachner.
Yes.
Trustee Kargi.
Okay, we have no unfinished business. And
well, we got to talk about the premium parking proposal.
Yeah.
The groundbreaking, earth-shattering. Stole it from Barrington. Go ahead.
Given that we'll put a moratorium on commuter parking in the neighborhood, it seems to me that we should kind of wait for the study before we rejigger how we do commuter parking around the train.
Okay.
What'd you say?
I just think I agree.
What?
I agree. Well,
what did I miss?
Motion to adjourn.
Did you just say we shouldn't be doing that?
No, we just had a conversation about, you know, putting a moratorium on stuff. Let's stop everything for right now and, you know, and get the study done and then come back.
Yeah, but that won't come back until, you know, 6 months, 5 months.
But it may come back 6 months from now and say we shouldn't be charging $100, we should be charging $200.
Are you going to be looking at that as your RFP?
The RFP was more focused on spaces, locations, resident, you know, the zones. It wasn't so much looking at the actual commuter spaces. I don't think we have a capacity. I'm happy to do with... Let me just raise the issue, the genesis for this, and then you can... We can proceed from there. So originally, right now we charge for permit parking, right? And so it's $50 a month. And we have a waiting list for residents, and we only charge as residents, and so there's a waiting list of people that want to buy permits. So these folks are saying, look, and this may be another way to tackle this, but I commute more than maybe 15 times a month, so I'm paying $5 a day for parking. If I had the permit, I'd be saving, depending on how many times I commute, I'd be saving money. But I can't get a permit because there's a waiting list, because we control the amount of permits, because we have only certain permit spaces. So when we redid this a year or two ago, when you get into it and you're like, okay, you know, Joan and I sat down, what are we doing? Realized we were overselling spaces to an amount that I wasn't comfortable with. So when we reset the rates, we reset that. And so we actually increased the amount of permit spaces. So we still had a waiting list, but we were able to kind of rejigger everything. Then over time, staff has sold more permits incrementally, five at a time, to see what that does to the lot configurations. So if you go down and look at the Thatcher lot, the green one over there, the West Thatcher lot, we'll get comments. Well, there's all these open spaces. How come I can't? What's going on? And so it's been this delicate balance of saying, okay, you know, we're going to increase that amount incrementally over time based on what we're seeing out there. But the reality is we are overselling our permits. So the thought was, we have kind of a problem here. I have residents complaining about being on a waiting list. How do we try to solve that problem? So what the proposal was to say is like, look, we'll sell permits. We don't believe we have a capacity issue when it comes to commuter parking. We have enough spaces for the people who want to park there, especially if you go down Hawthorne and parts of Central, we appear to be okay. The idea was, we'll create that $50 permit. That doesn't guarantee you a space anymore. That's more of it's a permit, but it's more of a cost savings measure that you can essentially prepay for your parking for the month for $50 should you choose. And then you can park anywhere in any zone you want. And then we thought, and I joke about stealing other towns' ideas, Barrington just created this model that said, look, we're going to create a premium area and do a one-for-one on that. So that was where the $100 concept came in and said, okay, here, look, if you really want to be guaranteed a certain space in a certain area, then we'll make it here in this middle area here and then along Hawthorne, because a lot of people like to jump in and out from the tunnel, and there's about 50 spaces there, and we'll start off with that and we'll sell those and say, if you want a guaranteed space and we wouldn't oversell those, $100 a month. Okay. So that was the thought. And then the next idea was that if there was a consensus on this, we would go and survey and get some input from the commuter parkers to see if they like that idea, don't like that idea, get their, excuse me, to get their input. But it really, the idea behind doing this is really a genesis to eliminate that waiting list, at least for the $50. Because again, that's, to me, that concern is motivated by the financial component. You could still potentially have a waiting list for the $100 for the premium. We would hope that would be the case. It might not be. We may undersell them and have to make a decision to scale that back a little bit. So,
and this is a point Patty raised, but so what would happen in the event that a permanent parker can't find a spot because all the spots are filled by all the non-permanent park, you know, daily parkers fill the entire spot. So now someone's bought a permit, which they assume guarantees them a parking spot, and they don't have a place to park.
Well, again, that goes back to, good question, goes back to the first comment that we don't believe we have a capacity issue. So along Central and Hawthorne, Hawthorne is, I mean, even I drive that area most days, there's, they barely get to the tracks, the CN line. That can go all the way down to, what is that, Franklin over there? The next street over? Yeah, Franklin. So right now, Trustee Kharji, most people park, the parking stops like around here. We have spaces all the way down over here.
Okay.
So I don't think the people, I don't think it's going to affect the capacity.
So that's the daily. So, but then on the permit, you're going one for one and that's it, right?
Yeah, for the premium.
There's two permits.
Right, the premium.
No, I understand.
Okay. Talking about the premium.
Yeah, the premium in this area here and the East Thatcher lot and on Hawthorne,
right,
one for one.
With the premium, would they be assigned spots?
probably not, but if we did it, I don't want to put the tags back up on the top like we used to, because the plow drivers are not happy those are removed. So, and again, everything is done right now through license plate enforcement. So,
so relatively
Eric,
close.
Yeah. So if you're saying this is not necessarily a capacity issue, typically on average, how many folks are on the waiting list?
It's gotten up into like 40, 50 people at times. I think it's a little bit more manageable around 25 or 30 at this time.
And these are residents versus anybody who walks in and asks to buy a permit.
The only permits we sell are to residents.
And so from your take, would you say these 40 or 50 people are parking in available spots but paying daily?
Yeah, when they're commuting. Yeah. I don't know. I don't know the frequency by which they commute. And so that's, I mean, again, from what we see, the people who buy the permits, anecdotally, what's been conveyed to me is years and years ago, people would hang on to the permit like it was, you know, gold, right? They would.
Right.
Yeah, no, really. They would go to Arizona for 3 months.
No, it's like your license plates.
And they would just say, look, I'll continue paying the fee because I don't want to lose my space.
But I think it's your earlier point. I think it's also kind of the way that people work today. You know, not everybody goes downtown every day. You know, not everybody's going down 20 days a month or whatever. And
right.
So, you know, that's the change that we're
dealing with. So when we did the one for one on permits versus spaces, no, like maybe the two cars were parking in that West Thatcher lot. Like no one was using it because we had so much extra capacity because the people were buying the permits are not using them every day. And then we're about, what, 20 over?
So it opens it up now.
No. And I appreciate 20. We don't want to
stare
at an empty lot because, so I guess my wonderment would be if the goal is to try and help residents who are on the waiting list not necessarily pay more than the 50 by paying a $5 every day, and you think we don't have a capacity issue, why can't we just even go moreover what you've been, you know, you said you've sold one-to-one and you've been increasing the amount over that. Why not just continue to do that and see how that goes?
Could do that.
Because what's ultimately going to happen is where we're maybe potentially setting up is that you're going to have somebody pay $50. And if you get too many daily people, then they're going to have paid $50 and not have a space to park either. So it's almost like.
It's possible.
What's that?
What?
Huh? I think the concern now with that is the fact that the one-to-one is for the two lots, and so there's a better chance of running it out for the two lots.
Right.
It's about giving us this option to run down Hawthorne. We think we far better our chances of not running into a situation where somebody doesn't have any room to park, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Between the two lots, there's less space. So right now, if you buy the $50 permit, you're guaranteed a space in those two lots. So there's a larger fear of us overselling them because we have less to work with there, less we're willing to work with.
Right.
We think we have plenty we will work with down Hawthorne.
And opening it up.
Well, again, you know, I hate to keep going back to this, but if we do this commuter study, you know, within the next couple of months, we'll know what we can release or not release.
Well, I think that's what you're asking, right?
Right.
I mean, the whole discussion here is for them to continue to look at it. So so long as nobody's really against this.
Yeah, I mean, the idea is we would take this concept that we're proposing and then convey that to the commuter parkers and say, what do you think of this?
You know, and get their feedback, but... I think we could do this concurrently with the, you know.
Yeah. Right. I think it's a great idea, and I think that those special permits, whatever premium, they're going to go like hotcakes.
Yeah. I think so too.
People will want that guarantee of that, you know, really convenient spot. The timing will be interesting in terms of the RFP for the overall village study, because query whether. Our parking fees and our parking structure impacts our overall village parking issue. It does. It must. So
actually, it sounds like it doesn't. If there's capacity still there,
right? Yeah. People want to park free.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. That's the problem, and so that's why we've got to do something with. Yeah, we got to move them over here.
Yeah. So I guess my I didn't appreciate that there was capacity. I thought that there was a limit.
No.
You know, that it was a scarcity, and that's what we're trying to address. If there's no capacity problem, then.
I agree with you. That was what I mean. My bulb went out. And then why do we have a waiting list? No capacity problem. Then I figured out why we're having this issue.
But this combines the extra capacity.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. See, so I don't think
stretch on Linden now is that. I'm sorry. The stretch west of Keystone, Hawthorne, is that currently daily?
You're talking right here.
Yes.
No, that's permit.
Permit. Okay.
All right, so then.
So it sounds like.
So let's go study it.
Okay.
Let's come back with.
So you'll be seeing some the staff publicizing this to the community and to the commuters. Yep.
Now, do you need a motion on the premium?
No, because you're not really.
That's what got us confused. Trustee Brennan wasn't quite sure what to say there. I wasn't quite sure. You did it right. You stopped. All right.
I think that we want people to be clear that if. On the off chance they pay a $50 permit, they may not get a space. I know you're saying it's not a capacity issue, but that's going to be the reality if we have an unlimited amount of permits that we sell.
And then maybe part of that is then how it's conveyed. So it necessarily it's a permit, but it's not a guarantee for a space.
That's what I'm saying. So that's, people need to be clear on that.
Correct. And if we start running here.
We don't know it until we do it,
I guess. But at the same time, if based on what we're seeing capacity wise, I'm not, at least at this point, envisioning that as a concern.
Okay. All right. Sounds good. So we have no unfinished business. We have 9 new business. So if I can get a motion and a second on 9A.
Can I make a motion to approve ordinance to amend section 4-5 of the Village Code regarding sign regulations?
Second. Thank you. Okay.
Yeah. So this is, give me one second here, modeled, let's back up a second. So we've, in the village code on our sign regulations, which we will have to comprehensively update here in the near future, one of the things we've looked at is the construction signage. So it's been great. We've got some new projects coming in. But our current sign regs are very limited in terms of what we can allow for signs. And certainly we want to provide a user-friendly and business-friendly experience for the contractors and prospective users to advertise their new project coming on board. So essentially what you see presented to you tonight is modeled after what Oak Park has done in terms of creating some more flexibility and larger signs for these projects. It also does contemplate the wrap signs that we talked a little bit about here tonight with the construction fencing. So certainly you could do a 2-for-1 there, right? You could come in and get a construction wrap sign that would work to protect the perimeter of the site but then also would act for purposes of advertising your project and things like that. So that it's built into this as well. So the idea is we would go, if we would, this gets approval tonight, Chicago and Harlem has actually been holding off on any kind of project signage. They have safety signage out there, which is governed separately. They would then be subject to these new rules.
Yep. Is there any height requirement regarding the fencing?
What's the permit condition for, what do we put in, 6 feet, 8 feet?
I don't know off the top of my head. They have, I believe they have 6 foot out there currently. On both sides.
Okay.
I guess the only question I've got around this is safety, and would you be able to, would they be able to put up anything in terms of wrap, something that might be heavy, and like if there's a, you know, a really windy day or something, might fall down and be a safety issue? Are there specific types of wrapping that, you know, I researched a bit and would probably be able to hold up to that better?
Yeah, so the wrap does, a lot of times they'll put the air pockets in there, or they'll cut through the air.
Would we require that then, so it doesn't?
Oh, yeah, absolutely, yeah. And we do require that the fences are secured, so a lot of times you'll find either posts or stakes into the ground, sandbags, other things like that, holding that down. So we'll do whatever we can from a preventative measure to help address those issues.
So my one question, will we differentiate between signs that are going on what I'll call commercial strips versus residential areas? So, for example, not to pick on them, but, you know, the project on Bonnie Bray, just south of Division, will they be, have the same type of signs, same type of regulations? As
right. So the way the rules are written, they would be subject to these rules because it's a planned development. Okay. But if you were doing a normal residential project, building a home, we don't allow any signs, and that would continue.
Okay, hearing no further questions, I'd ask the clerk to take a vote, please.
Trustee Brennan.
Yes.
Trustee Hennick.
Yes.
Trustee O'Connell.
Yes.
Trustee Bachner.
Yes.
Trustee Kargi.
Yes.
Trustee Vasquez.
Yes.
Okay, thank you. And our final motion is one of great concern, and it's 9B. So if I can have a trustee move and another second it so we can discuss.
I move to approve an ordinance to amend Section 8-6-22 of the Village Code to prohibit the sale of flavored liquid nicotine products.
Second.
Okay, very good. So this has been in the newspapers over the last 30, 60 days. I know that many of the municipalities are thinking about this and looking at this, and I know that the state of Illinois, mm-hmm. When they come back in their veto session, might even take it up as a state law. But I felt that we could not sit idly any longer on this issue, given the gravity of what it's done to our kids and children in our village, but those surrounding us. So I'd asked our village attorney to give us an ordinance that would allow the banning of flavored nicotine, flavors such like bubble gum and candy, cotton candy, and others can't be what adults want to use. It's what teenagers want to use, I believe all of my colleagues here are strongly against that, and strongly against luring children and teens, and certainly adults under 21 to vape or do any kind of e-cigarettes using flavored nicotine. Now, I'll let the village attorney say a little bit more about this, but the banning is on the flavored liquid nicotine, not the product, not the vape, not the e-cigarette itself.
That's
so
right.
I just want to make sure you're clear on that.
Okay. That's right. So the ordinance before you tonight would prohibit the sale, not possession, of flavored liquid nicotine products. The village has authority under the Illinois Municipal Code, is recognized by case law, to regulate items for human consumption. It's part of your core public health and safety requirements, or authorities rather. So you'll see in the ordinance that we define liquid nicotine products, we define flavored such flavored products and then prohibit the sale of them in the village. The ordinance includes a 30-day delay for its effectiveness so that the sellers of these items in the village have an opportunity to reduce their stocks, transfer them, sell them out, however they choose to do so before it takes effect. Once it takes effect, then those items will no longer be able to be sold in the village, and they'd be subject to confiscation, just like any of the other products that you deem as being illegal in town.
And if a if there is a violation, the fine is what, $750?
Right, per violation. So depending on how the police officers write the citations, each the offer for sale of each item could carry with it a fine of up to $750.
It was interesting that over the last 2 days or 3 days, whenever they did it, what is presumably the largest retailer in the world has now banned this from the sale from their stores. And, you know, the fact that they're taking the initiative to run their stock out and get them out, you know, it's just, nobody knows about this stuff. It's crazy.
It's crazy.
And, you know, this every night you hear another story on the news. And yeah. So, I mean, I'm fully supportive of, let's get this done and get that stuff out of here.
Right.
The signage that requiring them to notify that sales prohibited, is that something we'll provide to the tobacco retailers, or?
Not necessarily, no. I mean, we're going to send them a notification of what their sign has to be posted. That's a good suggestion, though, one we could maybe make it easy for them and put something in there.
A sign.
We could do that.
It's good. Very good. Yeah.
And I just want to clarify, we're talking about just the liquid nicotine. We're not talking about, you know, regular nicotine that will still be able to be sold, menthol and whatever other flavors as well.
Correct. The ordinance only addresses liquid nicotine that has flavoring added to it. Mm-hmm.
I would just go and amend what Trustee Kharji would say. I don't think we should. Maybe we give them a sample of what the sign should be, but I don't think we ought to take on that responsibility. They should have that responsibility. We would be providing them a sample as a courtesy.
I guess what I wanted was that way we can control the font.
Yeah.
So they control the what?
The fonts, the size of the
sign. Oh, the font. I said the fonts.
No, the fonts.
I did. Yeah. Like, wow,
exactly.
I mean, I don't care. I just, you know, I mean, my concern is that it could be illegible. You know, I'm not sure that if we leave it to the vendor to create their own sign, that it'll be as potentially dramatic as.
We don't have that many. I mean, how many businesses do?
Yeah.
What were the signs?
Yeah, those were a handful.
It's in the ordinance.
There's signage required.
Maybe. Well, unless you have a strong opinion on that, Russ, I think, you can arm wrestle a little bit. Or I think Trustee Kharji's idea of providing them a sign is probably a good one.
I guess I'm not opposed to giving them a sign. I guess what if an accident happens and they don't get a sign and then they don't post it because the staff didn't guess, and then it becomes our responsibility, our problem. Now, I'm okay with that, but I'm just saying, it's an additional burden for us versus something we're imposing on the business to be doing. So,
understood.
Okay,
that's a nice legal piece of it.
Take all that under
what
advisement.
Do you think about that, Attorney Kharji?
I dissent. Yeah.
Right. Said there's probably only two or three.
Yeah, there's a handful.
We'll just make sure those two or three get them.
Walgreens,
CVS, stops all the products.
7-Eleven.
All right. We'll figure it out, and but good points.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Any further comments on this? Hearing none, I'd like to take the vote.
Trustee Hennick?
Yes.
Trustee O'Connell?
Yes.
Trustee Bachner?
Yes.
Trustee Kharji?
Yes.
Trustee Vasquez?
Yes.
Trustee Brennan?
Yes.
Thank you for being a leader on this. I think we're one of the first villages to take the lead. I mean, there will be more to follow, but I think you should be proud of ourselves for this. Thank you. All right.
President Ducey, yes. Can I beg indulgence? I think I should have raised something at an earlier point. I'm not exactly sure when it would have been, whether it would have been during the elected official comments or unfinished business, but I've received some questions from residents about what I think is unfinished business. It has to do with the deer issue.
You
are we going to get to that?
No, we're not.
Okay.
But
the agenda event, we're not.
Yeah, it's not on the agenda. It should have been in your comments, but go ahead and I'll take the I'll take it up. Go ahead.
Yeah.
Thank you, everyone. Mm-hmm. So there have been some residents who've written to the village board and who have written to me individually and asked for information about where do we stand on the deer issue, what's happening with it. They want to make sure that they have an opportunity to be heard before something, you know, before it's too late. And specifically, they've asked about, you know, where do we stand with sharing information about public safety records, like accident records. I know some of the village board has seen some of those. Has that been incorporated in the FAQ already? I haven't looked recently.
No.
The accident reports have not? In the FAQ?
No.
Oh, well, we should. We could do that.
Yeah.
That's easy.
We did address the issue in general, but we did not include data.
We should.
Sure.
Absolutely. Good idea.
And what's the timing? Do we have any timing that we can tell residents, you know, when it will be discussed again or how it will be discussed again?
Unfortunately, I don't have that information, but as soon as if we get that information, we would certainly pass it along to everyone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I think we need to push it out once we have it because a lot of discussions.
Yeah. You will see. I mean, you can... I hope they're listening. There will always be a public meeting well before, you know, when we're ready to make a vote on any payment, you know, to the Cook County Forest Preserve or whatever, you know, whatever they're requesting of us. I mean, we would never not have that public meeting with, because you have to approve it if we're going to pay for, you know, anything, right? So I think you and I discussed that. So the fact that there might not be a discussion. It would only be possible if we're going to make a decision on the payment of the deer issue, I guess is what I'm saying.
Thanks.
Okay. Right?
Yes.
All right. So, more to come on that. All right. I don't think we're having executive session, so.
Yeah. Wow. Second.
Wow. Okay, second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
So we are at
no executive session.